Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today, the Oklahoma Policy Institute is releasing a new report documenting the budgeting decisions the state of Oklahoma has made over the past decade or so, as well as the cumulative effect of those decisions on public services and state revenue. A Better Path Forward examines the state budget, and when analyzed and accounting for inflation and population growth, states that the state is spending nearly $3 billion less today in 2021 dollars than 20 years ago. The report makes the case that Oklahoma has cut taxes and public services too much, as well as shift the responsibility to pay those taxes from those who can most afford it to those who can least afford it. The report identifies over 30 potential tax and budget reforms which shift tax responsibilities to higher-income Oklahomans, expands the sales tax base, enacting structural changes to diversify and expand state revenues, as well as make the tax system more fair for everyone. You can read the report at okpolicy.org, and I'm joined by the report's two co-authors, analysts for the Institute. Paul Shin is a budget and tax senior policy analyst, and Emma Morris is a healthcare and revenue policy analyst at OK Policy. And they're my guests today on Studio Tulsa. Paul Shin and Emma Morris, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, Rich.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Now, as I understand it, this report from OK Policy was designed to step back from the annual budget debates and look at the decisions the state has made over the past decade or so and examine their impact and how that's affected Oklahomans when it comes to the budget. What did you find?
Well, Rich, as you mentioned, it's really easy to look at budgets as individual events and kind of a zero-sum political game, but they do add up to meaningful change. And what we found when we looked at the last 25 years is Oklahoma's government has shrunk by about 22%. It's a quarter smaller. And we got that by just looking at this year's budget versus the budget in the year 2000, adjust them for inflation and adjust them for the number of public that we serve. That means we're getting less government. And we think it further means that we're not better off. You know, we're falling behind in education, healthcare, infrastructure, environment, just about every measure. You know, we're really sadly plummeting a little deeper into the bottom 10 and farther from the top 10.
In fact, when you actually look at that 22% less, who's paying it has shifted as well.
Yeah, that's right. So over the last two decades, we've shifted the tax responsibility from high-income Oklahomans to lower and middle-class Oklahomans. In the process, we've cut, we've reduced government services as well. And so both of those have been felt most heavily by the lowest income Oklahomans. And that also has implications for the way that we treat people of different races in Oklahoma tax policy. So, you know, it means that Oklahomans of color are paying a higher percentage of their income. It means that women are paying a higher percentage of their income in taxes. And the same for rural Oklahomans. All of those groups are overrepresented in lower income brackets. And so they've been most harmed by this shift in our tax policy.
Now, that was surprising to me that, in fact, rural Oklahomans are paying and it's a pretty small percentage, if I read it correctly, but rural Oklahomans are paying more than urban Oklahomans, which I, if you ask me just on the face of it, I would think that the opposite was true, that urban Oklahomans were paying higher tax rates. Why is that so?
I'm sorry, Rich. It's important to note that urban Oklahomans are paying a higher amount in taxes, in flat dollar amount, but as a share of income, it's the share for rural taxpayers that's higher. And that's the same thing is true. You know, white taxpayers pay more in dollars than black taxpayers, but the average black taxpayer pays more as a percentage of income. So, you know, we're asking those who can least afford to support government support it more than those who can most afford it.
And do you expect that that will be a surprise to legislators, that idea of that rural Oklahomans pay a higher percentage?
I think it may. I don't know of anyone that's looked at this before. And honestly, you know, neither we nor our predecessors looked at it before. So I think that that may be an eye opener for some legislators and probably for some rural residents and their leaders.
You know, it's interesting. If one is interested in learning about how the state spends and prioritizes its budget, it's pretty difficult, you know, because when you think of the $8 billion odd dollars that make up the general revenue fund, that doesn't account for a lot of the state spending. That's not transparent at all. And beyond that, how it decides to allocate the money of the general revenue fund is usually made behind closed doors. It's not debated in public. It's made by a very small subset of legislators. And then it's pushed through in the last week or so of the legislative session. What needs to change to make the state more transparent when it comes to how it collects and spends money?
Well, probably the key thing is that our legislature needs to be more open and more deliberate with the budget, both within the legislature and outside the legislature. You know, most states are going to introduce a budget in the first few weeks of session and probably, you know, go through various versions of that, and they're going to change it. Many hold public hearings. Many vote on individual amendments. So I can see if my legislator is supporting higher teacher pay, for example, and then they'll finally adopt a budget, you know, in a matter of 60 days, as opposed to the 3 days that it took our legislators.
What would make that more transparent if are you looking at more hearings? What exactly?
Yeah, hearings is important. Individual votes is important. You want to know what someone, you know, democracy requires us to elect the people we want and hold them accountable. And if we can't hold them accountable for anything other than, yeah, they voted for the budget, then we don't know enough about them to make an informed decision. We need to know that they voted for more or less in education, more or less in income taxes. And those things just don't get debated openly or recorded in our the system we use in Oklahoma.
Now, your first section looks at how the state has collected revenue and how it's insufficient to support a growing population, which Oklahoma is growing for the most part. And you look at how inflation has ate into what was the general revenue fund. Is it simply the tax cuts that we've seen in personal income, the corporate tax cut that happened recently?
So we've seen several different reasons for the shrinking budget. Tax cuts are definitely one. Over the years, we've cut income taxes, we've cut corporate taxes, we've gotten rid of some completely, such as the estate tax. But we've also, in addition to those tax cuts, expanded pretty significantly tax expenditures. So these are the credits, the exemptions, deductions that keep you from paying taxes that you otherwise would have. And so as we have expanded those, that has also contributed to the fact that our budget is shrinking.
When you look at some of those tax expenditures, I think people may not know exactly what a tax expenditure is. What is a tax expenditure?
A tax expenditure is when someone, as Emma said, would otherwise pay a tax, they don't pay it, they keep it, and that means less money for government. Examples are like some of your income may be exempt from taxation, like Oklahoma doesn't count your Social Security income as taxable. It may be a credit, like the earned income tax credit, where you figure out your tax and then you subtract out that amount. It may be a deduction where if you are high income enough to itemize your income tax deductions, you can deduct out your mortgage interest and that reduces your taxes. And it may also be some kind of incentive or direct payment for engaging in some economic activity that the state's trying to promote.
Now, one of the things you do is sort of outline some of the ones that have grown quite large. Things like, I think at one point we wanted to promote clean energy. So we gave some clean energy tax breaks. Those have grown greatly. What are some of these tax expenditures that have grown far probably beyond what legislators thought it would be when they first proposed the program?
It's a great question. One of the, as you mentioned, one of the ones that has grown the most is a credit for electricity that's generated by zero emission facilities. And it has, whenever it was enacted in 2008, it cost about $1.5 million. Now, in 2020, it costs about $88 million. So that is a significant increase. But one of the other ones that we point out in our report, maybe not something that you would think about immediately, is the sales tax exemption for disabled veterans. So this, in its first year, again, cost about 1.6 million and now has grown to 45 million. So it's a good example of the fact that we need to reevaluate what exemptions and credits are outlined in our tax policy, because in our tax structure, because things are going to grow. We've shown that things are going to grow. And so we always need to be looking back and figuring out if we still need to be providing those exemptions or what might need to change.
An important way to think about any kind of tax expenditure is this is a dollar we haven't collected, and it's a dollar that otherwise could go for public services, or it could go for a tax cut that helps everybody rather than a few. So we're not, you know, giving away nothing. We're giving away something. And we need to, you know, if say the Regents for Higher Ed, if their budget was 59 times now what it was in 2008, we would have some significant questions for them. Nobody up to this point, to my knowledge, has even calculated the zero emissions energy going up 59%. Why aren't we having that same discussion about that?
That's actually 59 times, according to your documents.
Right.
That's
59 times.
It went from a 1.4 to 88 million, you know, and some of those, like the disabled veterans sales tax exemption, that might be a good public use. But again, it needs to be debated in the fair light for Oklahomans, their representatives, to say, yes, this is something we believe in, to the point where we think this benefit should be given to disabled veterans, as opposed to something that just creeps up from $1.6 million to $45 million in 2020.
And if you kind of put that in perspective, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but a $45 million state agency would be one of the 20 largest state agencies. And so, you know, we would expect that in order to be something we want to continue, you know, you need to kind of think, is this important and valuable enough that we want to, say, not have a Department of Environmental Quality or one of those other kind of medium-sized functions? Because that's the decision we've made.
My guests today are Paul Shin, the Budget and Tax Senior Policy Analyst, and Emma Morris, the Healthcare and Revenue Policy Analyst at OK Policy Institute. They're co-authors of a new report titled A Better Path Forward. It is a new report on income and revenue from the state and looking at a sort of a long view of how the state has done its budget debates over the last 10 to 15 years and what we can expect going forward. Of course, one of the big hurdles is State Question 640. Which this limits tax increases. We've managed to get one tax increase barely through that 75% supermajority. And I know you advocate for at least changing it or repeal, I suppose. How is the State Question 640 having a long-term impact on revenues and the ability to provide services?
So the big thing here is that State Question 640 makes it easy to lower taxes and really hard, almost impossibly so, to raise those taxes back up. And so the decision that was made, you know, when 640 passed has basically tied the hands of legislators, of governors, leaders, and voters since. It's one of the most restrictive tax limits in the country. I think we're tied with Arkansas. Another thing is that it gives a legislative minority a lot of power. And, you know, the bottom line is that it has just kept us from making long-term investments in Oklahoma because we've gotten stuck into that cycle of easy to cut, really hard to raise.
You know, I can think of within a year of raising taxes through that State Question 640 threshold, the next year the legislature reduced some taxes and sort of lessened its impact.
Yeah, and it, you know, the Oklahoma's budget, even without those kind of, you know, occasional tax cuts, you know, we're such a roller coaster kind of effect anyway, because of our dependence, you know, our economy's dependence on oil and gas. And so when you may, you know, turn around so quickly and do another tax cut, you're really tempting fate about when is the next downturn going to be and how much worse did we just make it.
Another thing you tackle is looking at how the state is very much reliant on fees to fund its services. I think more people than not know that our judicial system is pretty much funded through fees and fines. But what about the rest of government? How reliant are we on fees for the nuts and bolts appropriation, you know, the nuts and bolts money that agencies spend?
You know, fees run the gamut, and a lot of them, I think, are completely reasonable. You know, a fee to get a driver's license and renew it or tag your car, those make sense. And they're important, but they aren't, you know, half or more of the cost associated with those fees, like they are in the case of fines and fees. Fees especially that, you know, they really don't, you know, there it's not, you know, when I get a driver's license, I'm voluntarily doing that and paying the fee. The fees that we charge on criminal defendants is the reverse of that. I'm not volunteering for that, and yet I'm getting, you know, potentially a lifetime worth of debt. The other place we're concerned about fees is in tuition on higher ed, which has gone up for residents 50% in, I think, the last 25 years. When you charge more to go to college, fewer people go to college. And, you know, while there are many jobs that don't require college, that's not where the growth is in employment. And so, you know, we're not only hurting families and bright kids who aren't going to be able to afford to go to school in Oklahoma, we're hurting our economy and our future by not funding higher ed with appropriations.
The whole concept of state-funded higher education was to provide more economic opportunities for its citizens. Seems like our state, frankly, most states have backed away from that commitment.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But, you know, we love to talk about Texas and how great they are because of not having an income tax. You know, the reality of how great Texas is they put a pile of money into higher ed. And they continue to do that. They spend about, I think, 50% more per year out of taxes on higher ed than we do. And, you know, by doing that, for every great, you know, research level institution that we have in Oklahoma, they have five or six.
Hmm. Now, one of the other major areas is the regressive nature of the state tax system. One of the things you do is you analyze taxes by percentage of income, which you alluded to earlier. What did you find using that idea of the percentage of income?
Yeah, great question. We found several things. So probably first and most notably, we found that low-income Oklahomans are paying a higher percentage of their income in taxes than wealthy Oklahomans. So of course, wealthy Oklahomans, as Paul said earlier, are paying more in dollars, but lower-income Oklahomans are paying a higher portion of their income. Lower-income Oklahomans are also paying more than lower income residents of other states. And so we found that in reality, while Oklahoma is often touted as a low tax state, for our low income residents, we are very far from a low tax state. I think we're the fifth highest tax state for our low income residents. And then finally, as I mentioned earlier, this has implications past just income levels. You know, it has implications for people of color, for women, and for rural residents.
Yeah. One of the things you did is you examined, say, the lowest 20% of state residents. If they paid the same rate percentage of income as the highest 20% of residents, they would be paying a lot less. Is that correct?
Absolutely. They'd be paying about $600 less. We also looked at what happened if we all paid the same percentage of income in state and local taxes. And, you know, I think a lot of people would say, yeah, proportional taxes are fair taxes. If they were, somebody in that lowest 20% would save about $300 a year. Somebody in the highest 1%, which is people, you know, making on average $1.1 million a year, they'd see a $50,000 increase. That's how out of balance we are.
Yeah. Now you advocate for a proportional system. Explain how that works.
Sure. A proportional system means regardless of your income, you pay the same share percentage of your income in taxes. So in Oklahoma, if we were to do that, everyone would be at roughly 11% of their income would go to state and local taxes. Other options are a progressive tax system. And that's like the federal income tax, where the more you make, the higher the share you pay. And then finally, the other option is regressive, which, you know, Emma already described. That means the less you make, the higher percentage you pay. And that is largely in Oklahoma a result of our high sales tax and also applying our sales tax to a lot of goods and very few services.
Yeah, we do. That's another thing you advocate for is applying sales tax to more services. I suppose if you have sales tax applying to more services, perhaps that sales tax doesn't need to be as high as it is.
That's absolutely possible, Rich. We'd probably be more inclined to use that money to replace some of the lost revenue and services over the last decade. But that's absolutely a discussion we could have if we were willing to expand the sales tax base towards services. And we're behind a lot of states in that regard in the services that we tax.
Let me ask you one more question that has to do with, you know, the fact that for all intents and purposes, the state has, when it comes to personal income tax, has pretty much a flat tax. I mean, it does not take much money for you to be at the highest rate of income tax. You know, I think it's what, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 that is graduated, maybe less. I haven't looked lately. And then pretty much you're paying the same rate. How does a lower income resident pay more if for all intents and purposes, you have a fairly flat tax structure in the state? Is it all the other taxes that are, you know, you're paying close to 10% of sales tax?
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. Sales tax is where we see, it is the primary reason for the fact that low-income Oklahomans are paying a higher portion of their income in taxes. Because we all pay the same tax on, you know, a loaf of bread, that's going to take more of the income of the lower income person than it is of the income of the higher income person. So that's how we get to the point where we have a very regressive system.
Another part of it, Rich, is what are called excise taxes, which are, you know, basically sales taxes on a specific item, the gas tax, cigarette taxes, the taxes on alcohols and liquor, car tags, driver's license, things like that. You know, they don't ask you when you buy a pack of cigarettes how much you make, or when you buy a gallon of gas how much you make. And if someone who makes 100 times what I do probably isn't buying 100 times the gas I do or the cigarettes I do and or the driver's licenses that I do. So that means, you know, that makes the hit down amongst the lower half a lot harder.
One of the things you advocate is eliminating or at least critically examining a lot of the tax incentives. And that goes for everything from the tax funding for the film industry. I mean, we're all excited that Killers of the Flower Moon was shot in Oklahoma, but those were probably very expensive tax credits involved in the filming. You talk about, you have a table which looks at how tax incentives are budgetary choices. You say, you know, hey, if we took this money that was used in, say, the film industry, that $30 million a year, we could build 2,200 miles of broadband capability in Oklahoma. Can you give us a sense of how we should look at these tax incentives to see if they're doing the job they were expected to do when they were created, or are they just giveaways?
Yeah, the answer is yes to both parts. We have a commission that's appointed by the legislature and the governor that evaluates incentives, but they don't appropriately ask the question about whether they're giveaways. You know, the evaluations that we do assume that a company that chooses to come to Oklahoma or expand that it wouldn't have without having the incentives. And that's very rarely the case. You know, typically companies want to know, you know, where are the workers? Where are the customers? Where can I get land? Even just what we pay in taxes in general tends to be like, you know, 10th or 11th in the factors that they consider. Experts say that maybe a quarter to a third of corporate decisions about location are because of incentive. And so, you know, that just means that we are likely handing money to someone who is going to come anyway. And we open them with welcome arms, whether they cost us $30 million or $0 million. And, you know, you mentioned the table of trade-offs. it might be that those are good trade-offs. Maybe it's more important to us to have more kids in private school than it is teachers in public schools. But that, you know, those decisions ought to be debated and made consciously rather than, oh, it's good for Oklahoma to do X. We're going to do it.
That refers to the Oklahoma Equal Opportunity Educational Scholarship Act. Well, you offer a whole range of policy changes that you would look for, options for the fiscal future. If I can ask each of you to name a few that you would like the legislature to concentrate on in the upcoming session, what would they be? Emma, let me start with you.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind for me is expanding the sales tax relief credit. This would go a long way towards reducing the regressivity of our state tax system. This is a credit that basically offsets the cost of groceries for low-income Oklahomans. And so the credit actually hasn't been updated, I believe, since 1992. It has been $40 since then. And as you can imagine, that $40 today means a lot less than it did in 1992. So starting there, significantly expanding that number, maybe making it available to more people, and then indexing it to inflation so it continues to grow, I think would be a great starting point towards making sure that our low-income Oklahomans aren't treated unequally by our tax system.
Yeah, and I'm going to be the bad guy. I will mention, since this is radio and not TV, I'm 66 years old. I'll shortly collect Social Security. I itemize my tax deductions because I pay quite a bit in taxes and mortgages and charitable contributions. We need to make our tax system fairer by where we give tax breaks, tie them to income. You know, when my wife and I retire, we'll probably have $80,000 in tax-free income between Social Security and our public pensions. How is that fair when, you know, a couple struggling with a couple kids, maybe making $25,000, they pay taxes on the first dollar of that $25,000? Similarly, you know, itemized deductions on the income tax, not every state has those, and those are used almost exclusively at the top 20%. I will continue to work very hard, even after I'm retired, to make a system where what you pay is based on your ability to pay and where any two people with the same ability to pay the same taxes. And both the credit that Emma mentioned and other low-income credits, plus reasonable and fair taxes at the higher income level, are the solution to that.
Well, we'll leave it there. Paul and Emma, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you, Reg. Pleasure talking with you.
Paul Shin is a budget and tax senior policy analyst, and Emma Morris is a healthcare and revenue policy analyst at the Oklahoma Policy Institute. The two are co-authors of A Better Path Forward, a new report from the Institute, which identifies over 30 potential tax and budget reforms for the state of Oklahoma. You can read the executive summary or the entire report at okpolicy.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.